You're listening to Truth to You with Jono, and in the studio, Khani, say hi.
Hi.
And g'day to wherever you may be around the world. It's great to have your company. And joining me today is the cultured Karaite. G'day, Deborah.
G'day, y'all. How are y'all doing?
Doing very, very well. Great to have you back on the program. And I want to put you on the spot before we do anything. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Recently, Nehemiah Gordon put himself out on YouTube eating a locust, eating a grasshopper.
I saw it.
Ugh. Saw it. Now, are you going to be fermenting grasshoppers? That's what I want to know.
Well, you know, in Alaska, during the fishing season, they catch fish and they put them in the ground. They just dig like a pit and they put all these fish in the ground and they cover them up with dirt. And they go back about 6 months later and it becomes kind of a fermented fish paste. And this is almost like a delicacy for them. So I'm thinking that this is something that we ought to get into here, is figuring out a way to ferment these grasshoppers, maybe, and make some kind of grasshopper paste out of them.
It's got a whole lot worse than I thought it could possibly be. I mean, honestly, I was quite impressed that he did it, but then it got me thinking, you know, I mean, you could get a whole lot of them, put them in a jar, cover them with whey, and, you know, wait for a few days, some salt, and you've got fermented, but you've taken it to a whole nother level, and now we're talking about fermented grasshopper paste.
Yeah.
Oh, it could be a market for it.
Add that to the list of experiments. You can do that one, Deb. I'm not having a bar of that one.
I'm going to leave it alone for a little bit.
Okay. Maybe Nehemiah might be up for that. We'll see. But speaking of experiments, have we done any more experiments? Is there any more experiments going on? Deb, what's happening in your kitchen?
Well, I have to be honest, and I talked to Hani about this the other day. I really have to make myself do new things because there are so many things that I love that I would just stick with those and I would get in a really big rut. But I've been trying some new things, and I've been excited. And one of the things is I wanted to, you know, kind of cut through the hype on some stuff and get to the root of it. But I do want to tell you, you know, last time we talked about the non-toxic cleaning things. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I tried was I have a shower curtain that occasionally will get just on the bottom of it, it'll get some mildew. And I've usually always in the past bleached it. And this time I put it, kind of wadded up the bottom and stuck it in a bucket of clear vinegar water and let it sit for a little while. It worked like a charm. It absolutely did the job. And so much, you know, so cheap and so safe. My cat sometimes will jump in the bathtub and play. And I didn't have any fear of her, you know, getting in there with bleach water. Mm-hmm. It was very safe. And it worked.
You're telling me that the vinegar did the same job just as well as the bleach did?
Yes, it did.
Did you have to leave it a little longer than you would with the bleach?
You know, I probably yes, but I, you know, what I did was I put it in there and I went on about my business and, you know, later on, you know, took it back out and it was, you know, perfectly clean. So, yeah, I'm sure bleach does work faster, but it's not near as safe.
No, that's
true.
Right.
Well, I'm all for that because I cannot stand the smell of bleach. I just really cannot. And I love the smell of vinegar. So that's a winner.
Well, vinegar is very deodorizing for your room. You can put like a little cup of it just off somewhere, you know, where nobody sees it, and it will actually deodorize the air in your room.
Really?
Yes, it will.
Okay, so I haven't tried that.
Yeah, it works really well like that.
But it does. But I've noticed when Khani or Bridget are using it to clean, it does. I like the smell. It gives a life to the air, and it's something I actually enjoy breathing in, vinegar, rather than the harsh chemicals that are often used, which I can't stand. I also like drinking, you know, every now and then a little bit of apple cider vinegar with water. I'm a friend of vinegar.
It's very good for you. It's extremely good for you to drink it.
Now, you've been drinking some interesting things of late. Can you tell us about those?
I almost don't know where to start, but I guess I'm going to start with the young coconut water, kefir. I have not gotten water kefir grains because for me, I didn't want to take in the sugar. I've done a little bit more research and found out some of the ways that you can lessen the sugar content in water kefir. But I went ahead and bought the water kefir grains so that I could make coconut water kefir. Now, not coconut milk. I've made coconut milk kefir with the milk kefir grains. But this is young coconut water. And the reason I wanted to do it is because when you go on to all of these wonderful sites that are promoting good whole food and fermented vegetables and fermented drinks, one of the big things recently in the last 2 to 3 years is this young coconut water, and everybody's gone crazy about it, and it's the bomb and all that sort of stuff. And for me, I wanted to see how much is hype, what are they trying to sell me, and how much is actually worth my time and energy to look into. And also, one of the big things was I watched a series of videos, and I actually posted them on Facebook, YouTube videos that Donna Gates and a doctor named Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride did on autism. They got together. Donna Gates has kind of done her own thing with body ecology and fermenting and trying to explain to people how they need to get their gut health going. And Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride is a neurologist who has a son who was diagnosed with severe autism when he was 2 or 3 years old. And he's now about 17, but she did these videos when he was 12, and she said he was completely recovered, and she did it with diet, which that to me, that's amazing. And that's information that needs to get out there. This whole series of 6 videos is only 42 minutes long. So it's not that big of a deal to watch, but, the information on there was astounding. And one of the things they were talking about was the young coconut water kefir, but they also talked about eating lots of fermented vegetables and fermented drink, whether it was milk kefir or kombucha or, these different things.
Sure.
So I looked into the young coconut water, and it really does have some amazing things about it. During World War II, they could, because young coconut water is the only thing that you can put into yourself intravenously, directly. In other words, other things have to, something has to be done to them. They're not good to go straight into your bloodstream. Uh-huh. But this stuff has properties and is sterile inside this little coconut, and it can go straight into your veins. And in the South Pacific Theater during World War II, they actually did that.
Really?
From time to time. Yes. And it's really good for you. It's amazingly good for you. And this is not the big hairy brown coconuts. That's not what I'm talking about. These young coconuts are kind of green looking, and I think they come, I don't know if there's a white part inside of that you have to actually cut through, but to get to the center where the young coconut water is. And right now the biggest country that is producing these and evidently has stepped up production because of all of this is Thailand. They grow them in Thailand. Uh-huh. And you can get it in the store, and in the store the kind that you buy is pasteurized and it is from concentrate. So, for me, I'm just kind of like, I know it's a good product and they're trying real hard, but when it's on a store shelf, they don't really have a choice but to do it that way.
Sure.
And I bought the young coconut water direct from a manufacturer that flash freezes it. So it's not from concentrate and it's not pasteurized, and it's expensive. That's the downside, is it's about $5.58 for 11.5 ounces.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So it is expensive. It does have some great properties, and I think that it's something that people should look into if they have some special health issues, or maybe their child does. I really think that it has a lot of good benefits, but right now the price is just too high. It the young coconut water kefir is high in potassium, high in B vitamins, and has lots of good minerals. And one of the things that it's being, you know, touted as is a replacement for those sports drinks, Gatorade and whatever, you know, those sports drinks are. But the truth is, it's so expensive that you really just should drink water. You shouldn't drink those drinks. You should just drink some water or even some water kefir, which is, you know, so much less expensive. Mm-hmm. Well, almost virtually free to make water kefir. You just need a little sugar. But there are some really great benefits to it. I was really impressed with the way I felt. And if I could afford, I cannot afford it, but if I could afford to keep it up, I think that I would, you know, notice a lot more things. However, everything that people wrote about it are some of the exact same things that milk kefir does or that water kefir does. So, you know, for the price, I would say it's not really worth it unless there was a special health issue. But I am impressed with it, so I want to give it a fair shake. The biggest downside is the cost.
So we're talking young coconut.
Young Thai coconuts. Uh huh.
Water.
Yeah, young coconut water.
So the green.
So I just want to get this straight. This is different to young coconut milk.
Yes.
So the milk and the water is a different thing. So the milk.
It is.
Comes from the mature coconut. Is that fair? Do I understand?
That's what I understand.
And what if I understand you correctly, Dev, did you earlier say that you have kefired coconut milk with milk kefir grains? Is that what you said?
I did. I used, and as a matter of fact, I used canned coconut milk to do it, and it worked great, and it was delicious. It worked really well,
okay.
And was really, really good. The only thing is, you would need to put your milk kefir grains back into milk ever so often, you know, to keep it going, because the process does
take place. Is it as beneficial as milk kefir, or does it have different benefits, different properties about it?
Well, it does have different properties because of what's given, you know, in coconut milk. You know, it has different properties than regular milk, and it's very good for you. It's very, very good for you. So, and I guess for me, you know, the difference is in taste. And coconut milk is not as expensive as the coconut water, but it is a little bit expensive. I think a 12 to 15 ounce can here is about $1.99 to $2.39.
Yeah, it's about the same here.
Yeah.
It's not that.
But we can actually, I mean, you haven't actually been able to find whole young coconuts yet?
You can, but they're almost as expensive.
Right.
And here's the issue with them. And this is would make it, you know, a little bit more agonizing for me. They're very hard to get into.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say, is you also need to buy a whole set of tools, of industrial tools, just to get into the things. You know?
Just need a drill. That's all you need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
a drill will do, all right.
Yeah, you do.
Where we live out here, they're impossible to come by, but there are certain places in Australia that they are easier to come by, and they're definitely cheaper, like up north.
Yeah, okay, so up north in the tropical
tropics,
areas
yeah.
of Australia, perhaps,
yeah.
If you're so blessed to live in such an area, it might be a little bit more affordable for you to include. Now, when you did, Dev, when you did the young coconut water kefir, did you have to add any types of sugar to get that going and get it happening, or did you just have it straight?
I put the water kefir grains in,
okay.
and to me, that was the beauty of it. This does not require sugar added, and because there's enough sugar in, you know, naturally in the coconut water, that it kefired beautifully. I mean, it was amazing. It was very, very good. Didn't smell so good when you got it up to your mouth, you know, to drink. It didn't smell good, but the taste completely belied the smell. It tasted good, but the smell was a little, you know.
Is it coconutty? I mean, was it?
The taste is not really, not like you think of coconut, no. It was a little bit sweet, and of course, you know, the kefir made it sour, but I guess, you know, for me, if I had a blindfold on, I would not be sure that it was coconut.
Okay. Okay, interesting.
So, interesting.
But incredible health benefits is what you're saying, although the downside is, of course, the cost. And when you weigh that up, if I understand you, Deb, when you weigh that up against your milk kefir, even some of your water kefirs, you're still getting incredible value and benefit from your standard milk kefir and water kefirs, particularly the milk kefir. And you wouldn't be tempted to make the, though as healthy as it is, make the young water coconut water a regular practice because of the cost. You would stick with the milk kefir.
Very definitely, or kombucha, or the water kefir. Now, you know, if somebody had some special health problems, I think it would be worth it. But still, the benefits are basically the same. Maybe there's higher potassium in the young coconut water, but other than that, the vitamins, you know, the minerals, they're very, very comparable to the other things that are out there that are less expensive. And for me, besides the heart, you know, it being so hard to get into these things, to crack them or to drill through, is the fact that in the United States, because they're probably not grown here and they're imported from Thailand, they'll come in and you honestly don't know how long they're sitting before somebody's bidding on them to buy them. Mm-hmm. And then they're shipped to the store. And so you don't really know how long they've been sitting. And if you get into it and the water is pink in color, you have to throw it away.
Right. Oh, really?
Yeah. So you might get your money back from the store, but what a hassle to do it that way.
It's okay if you live on a tropical island somewhere. You should be doing it all the time.
Yeah. So if you're listening to us in Fiji, we'll send you some water grains and you can make it. But it, you know, again, I think it would be a special situation of somebody who can afford it, and or, you know, a special health situation. I think it would be something really good to add.
Fair enough. And I suppose if you do have a special health need, like you mentioned autism, it's definitely something to at least try. It's probably, if there's such a need in a family, they're more likely to invest in something like that.
That's right.
If there is.
Sure.
That kind of,
One of the things I did just learn, because I've really been concerned about the sugar content, like of well, for me, kombucha has a two-edged sword that I personally am not willing to do. But the people that I know that make kombucha swear by it. They say it's the greatest thing. I personally don't drink tea because of the fluoride content of tea leaves. All tea leaves has very high fluoride content, and the sugar content also in making kombucha. But I did find that now that I've got these water kefir grains and I'm not making the coconut anymore, I found how to reduce the sugar content, and that is to let the grains grow and use actually more grains than what you probably normally would. And they will eat all the sugar up, and so you're left with very little.
Right. So the fermentation would take not as long?
Actually, I'm still going 24 hours with it. Mm-hmm. A quarter cup of sugar in a quart of water, and I do put some mineral water in there, a little bit of mineral water, because kefir loves minerals, and these things have grown amazingly, and a quarter cup of sugar, and then let it go for 24 hours, mm-hmm. Gosh, the whole probably bottom quarter to a bottom third of that jar is full of grain. So it's a lot.
Yeah.
Deb, can I just bring you back to something that you said that this is the first time I've heard? You said that tea leaves have fluoride. Can you elaborate on that? That's the first I've heard about that.
I don't have the information like right in front of me, but there's a great website that is specific to fluoride, and they go to great lengths on lots of different information that all tea, and it's evidently, from what I understood, a property of tea that causes it to absorb fluoride, you know, from the groundwater, from, you know, wherever it comes from. And of course, now so many places. And they said this was for China, for Africa, where teas are grown. This is the fluoride content. They've tested them. They're all very, very high. And when that's heated with water, it binds with aluminum. And those are just some things I'm not willing to subject myself to anymore. Now, that's a personal choice, you know. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got to figure it out for themselves. But that's my understanding, is that all tea leaves, because of the property of tea leaves, absorbs fluoride just tremendously.
Very interesting. Well, thanks for mentioning that. That's one, obviously, to look into, and perhaps we might elaborate on that in future shows. I'd be interested in listeners' comments if they have any information on that.
Now, yes, I would be too.
It's not the only thing that you've been drinking, though, isn't it? You do have some, or your sister's brought around some experiments of their own. Can you elaborate on that?
Oh, my sister, we went there for Pesach, and my sister's been making, for a while now, she's been making beet kvass. And you spell kvass, K-V-A-S-S. And I, you know, I just love the history. I'm such a history person. I got into the internet to see, where did kvass come from? What does it mean? What is this? It's an old Eastern Slavic word. And it made me laugh, because it's the word for yeast or leaven. Kvass means yeast or leaven. And of course, those things are used, you know, those terms are used in fermentation. Uh-huh. This is the original kvass that was made in the Eastern Slavic countries originally. And this is ancient. There's stuff going back to ancient Greece and before of people talking about kvass. It was made with rye bread. It was made in much the same way that beer was made in ancient Egypt, where they fermented, back then they fermented barley loaves, and kvass was made by fermenting loaves of rye bread. And, you know, Slavic countries are big on rye. But this didn't have, everybody drinks it from babies up, so it didn't have an alcohol content. And it's such a popular drink, and it's... matter of fact, just until recently, that they didn't even, nobody drank Coke. That's changing now, but in countries like Russia, you know, everybody drank kvass, and they would make barrels of it, just absolute barrels of it. So basically, beet kvass, and you could literally make a kvass out of just about anything, any kind of vegetable. And again, you know, I'm trying to avoid grains, and so I wouldn't make it out of grains. But she's been making this absolutely delightful beet kvass. And the cool part about it is, when you cut up your beets to make the first batch, you can use those same beets again in the second and possibly a third batch before you have to, you know, do something with them, like make a soup or, wow, you know, do something. So, boy, you talk about economical, and you get all of these benefits of, you know, you put whey in it to get it and some salt. Of course, if you just use salt and water, it'll ferment, but a little whey helps kind of, you know, boost the process along. And, we loved it. And Zev loved it. And he just kept drinking it. We were there Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And Saturday, about noontime, he looked at me and he said, "I don't feel so good." and I said, "Really? You know, what's going on?" And, you know, he started telling me, and I said, "Well, you're detoxing." And he said, "What do you mean?" And I said, "You've been drinking this beet kvass and you're loving it and you're detoxing." And that's exactly what was happening.
Wow. And so now, can I just ask you then, how is it different to water kefir? I mean, what's the difference between kvass and kefir? What are we talking about here?
Well, kvass would be just like any fermented vegetable. For instance, my asparagus I fermented. If I drank the liquid around it, that's actually an asparagus kvass. And right, with the kefir, with the kefir, you've got the grains, either milk grains or water grains in the liquid. Right. So I think it's probably more a little bit of a, maybe a misnomer calling it kvass, but in a way it's not, because the fermentation process is, you know, a yeast and lactobacillus. It's, you know, lots of different things we know now. Of course, they didn't know back then. They just, you know, knew that it came from the air, like the yeast does the sourdough bread.
Right.
So, and I'm going to try, and I want Hani to try the pumpkin kvass. I think that would be awesome.
We got plenty of pumpkins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So would you do it with the beets? pumpkin and beet kvass, or just
you, you could you could do that. Yeah, or you could just do pumpkin. I'm gonna try in. Once I get through with this batch of doing it two or three times, the next batch I'm going to do carrot and beet.
Okay.
That sounds you know, good to me, and there's so many, you know, benefits. And that's the interesting thing. We've talked about this before, how the fermentation process takes the vegetable, takes the vitamins, the minerals, all the good antioxidants, all the good things in these vegetables, and it increases them. That's what fermentation does. And that's one of the things these two ladies on these videos I was referring to, on YouTube, they're called the Autism Diet. There's six videos. And they were explaining how, you know, these minerals and vitamins and everything are increased by fermentation. What I didn't know, one thing they did say was that this fermentation process gently chelates a person. So you will get rid of things like mercury and things that you really shouldn't have in your body.
Right.
Brilliant.
It will gently chelate you without chemicals or without chelation processes, which I understand can be a little bit harsh. Yeah. You just stick with the fermentation, and you will self chelate, which I think is awesome. I'm finding so many more and more and more positive things for fermentation that it's amazing to me.
So just when you're talking about chelate is a new word for me, but when you describe that, it makes me think of cilantro. I know that I've read that eating cilantro is very good for detoxing from heavy metals, unlike anything else, is my understanding. But what you're telling me is that eating fermented foods or drinking kvass will also gently have a similar effect.
It does. It does, and it's gentler on your body, certainly.
Okay.
But to know that I already knew that I was getting rid of toxins because I knew that my cells and everything were renewing and getting better, and I'm getting healthier, and your body wants to push out toxins. But what I didn't understand was that the fermentation in particular, it performs the chelation, you know, situation. So I thought that was great.
That's really okay. So that's yet another benefit. So kvass, really, can I say that kvass is any juice from a fermentation process?
Yes.
Okay, so the juice of the fermented chili, right?
You're welcome to that on your own.
Yeah, no kidding.
So that's a chili kvass, right?
Yeah, it is.
That's a chili kvass. I can drink that. That's a healthy thing.
Oh, man. You go right
ahead.
Then
we'll be going to hospital.
I'm just saying. I'm about the garlic, right? I mean, the fermented garlic. That's a garlic kvass.
Yeah.
And I wanted to tell you something about the garlic. Two things. One, we got a post. I believe the lady's name was Stacy. Hello, Stacy.
G'day, Stacy.
She posted about would garlic kill the fermentation?
Oh, okay.
The probiotics. I'm sorry, the good stuff. Mm. And I read an article that it would. And, you know, I sat there and the article made sense to me. And I thought, well, gee, you know, and it just suggested that if you're going to have garlic, you know, have it 2 or 3 hours on either side of, you know, having, say your milk kefir. And that way it wouldn't kill the good probiotics.
Mm-hmm.
But I went to my jar of garlic that I have in the refrigerator, and I thought, well, if this is true, if this article is correct, and the garlic has such antibiotic properties that it kills the probiotic, then my garlic in the refrigerator should be, you know, flat. It should not be fermented anymore.
Yeah.
And you know, you can open the jar and it'll go psss, you know, because the off product, the waste product of fermentation is carbon dioxide, because these are live organisms, and so they're eating and they're making waste, and that waste product is carbon dioxide. And I opened that jar of kefir, and it went, garlic, and it went psss.
It's funny you should say that, Dev. What happened to you the other day?
I just, I was fermenting, exactly the same thing. It was just, I was fermenting the garlic, and with Pesach, I forgot to just release the carbon dioxide when it was sitting on the bench for a few days. And then I finally thought, all right, this has got to go in the fridge now, and I opened it, and it just went psss.
Yeah.
So and I fizzed. It actually fizzed.
So something's going on in there. Something's happening in there. So it would be interesting to put it under the microscope, or maybe we should. I am yet to ask Stephen Tamplin. I'd like to know what he has to say about that, and perhaps we'll do that in the next show with him. But something's going on there, and you know, it's.
And even with garlic, it's supposed to kill. Is that what you're saying, Dev? Even it's with the, according to that article, the garlic is supposed to kill any probiotics, but it obviously is still happening in there.
Right. I was like, you know, I'm reading this article. It seemed good and scientific. And then I go to my refrigerator and my garlic that's been in there for, because I did a great big 2-quart jar of it. My garlic's still just, you know, fermented as it can be because it's still, you know, putting off carbon dioxide. And that's how you know. You know, and it hasn't rotted. You know, that's the interesting thing about fermentation. You know it's good if it hasn't rotted.
Yeah.
So, and that fizz. So, and one thing my sister does, and I wanted to tell Jono this because I thought, oh, Jono could just walk by there and get a spoonful anytime he wanted it. she took some of her fermented garlic and she pureed it and put it into a jar. You know, it's still fermented, and put it in the refrigerator. And it's actually easier to use in some recipes that way.
That's a really good idea.
With the water?
Yeah.
Or just in a jar, just on its own?
Yeah, I think she put a little of the water that was in with the garlic into what she pureed, and just put it in a separate, smaller, you know, smaller jar.
That makes sense. That is a good idea. I like that.
It was an awesome idea. So I thought that was great.
Very good.
So I have my kvass right now. I came home and from the weekend, and I went to the store and the next day and got beets, and but I decided to put some mandarin oranges in with mine. So this is all new. I'm just on an experiment kick here to do that and see if I get some orange beet kvass.
So Dev, I've just opened up my trusty Nourishing Traditions cookbook.
Yeah.
And there's actually a recipe for beet kvass in here, which is very, very simple. It's just 3 beetroots peeled and chopped, and 1/4 cup of whey and 1 tablespoon of sea salt and water. But basically she says here that this drink is, I'm just reading it here, it's valuable for medicinal qualities and as a digestive aid. And beetroots are loaded with nutrients, and 1 4-ounce glass morning and night is an excellent blood tonic. Promotes regularity, aids digestion, alkalizes the blood, cleanses the liver, and is a good treatment for kidney stones and other ailments.
I went even further and looked up beets to see, you know, what they have. Mm. And oh my goodness, they're basically a superfood, and they're just now beginning to do some research that beets are showing very definite and pretty big anti-cancer properties.
Right.
Well, we already know that fermentation in and of itself has anti-cancer properties. So, and of course all it ever does to a vegetable is make it better.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, increase those properties. So this is going to be really interesting going forward.
It will be.
I have to tell you, I was with my sisters, 3 of them. There's 3 of them there in East Texas. I was with them in November, and their health was really improving. They had just, you know, basically started on the fermentation about a month or two, and they were doing the milk kefir and getting into, so excited about fermenting so many vegetables. And when I went back this time, there was a noticeable difference in them. To me, that was just amazing. They had lost weight. Their you know, skin looked better. You know, happy, feeling good. Some of the things, you know, were same thing experiencing. One of my sisters is experiencing the hair turning back a little bit browner.
Wow.
And one of the things was her eyebrows have gotten back thick again and dark again. And it was really, you know, kind of shocking because these things are happening, and they're like liver spots. Now we're all in our 60s. There are 4 of us are in our 60s. And and so we're starting to get some of these things that older folks do, what battle scars. And, but the liver spots are fading. which I'm experiencing too. I had a sun place on my face, and it's really faded quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And Zev and I have had some moles that we've had for a while have fallen off. They've experienced the same thing. But one of the things was how I could see it with my eyes, you know, such a difference in their health. And they believe like I do that the milk kefir is essential, but now they certainly believe that the beet kvass is extremely essential.
Wow. Okay. Well, it sounds like they're getting wonderful benefits from that. But it's look, I'm excited because obviously anything that's fermented produces a kvass. And I'm now thinking, because look, Dev, when I finish my fermented chili, and I'm looking at the half full jar of juice, and I'm going, oh, it seems like such a shame that, you know, what is this now? I mean, what, do we just pour it down the sink, or we?
Oh no, I have an idea, and I actually did this, and do you like hard boiled eggs?
Oh yeah, look, I like hard boiled eggs.
Well, when you get through with all the chilies and you've got that delightful juice left, hard boil some eggs and put that in the juice. You have to peel them, you know, take the hard shell off of them after they're cooled, and put those into that jar and I would leave it out on the counter for a day or so, maybe 12 to 18 hours, something like that. Uh-huh. And then put it back in the refrigerator, and the white part of the egg will absorb not only the nutrients and the good fermentation and some of the flavor, and they should be absolutely delightful for you.
Wow, okay.
A new twist on chili eggs.
Yeah, a new twist on chili eggs. I love chili eggs. So hang on. So, okay, so I'm getting my eggs, hard-boiled eggs. I peel them. I put them in a jar with the juice. I could probably get maybe three, I suppose, in there. And that sounds great to slice up and have with a salad.
I did with a beet. I had some fermented beets, and I had some, you know, juice left over. And I had seen this on the internet where they did it, and it turned the white part purple. And so my husband loves hard-boiled eggs, so I just flopped those eggs into that jar and let them sit for a while. And, of course, eggs like that are very easy for him to take in his job. He needs food that, you know, he can, like, eat with one hand. And so I usually keep hard-boiled eggs for him.
Sure.
And he took those. He said they were delicious. He said that, you know, they weren't, you know, overpoweringly, you know, sour or anything like that. Mm-hmm. You could tell they had been in the juice, but he said they were delicious. And he said they were purple all the way down to the yellow part.
Oh, really? Right down to the yolk?
Yeah.
It penetrated into the yolk. That's awesome. All right, there's a winner. So when you've finished your ferments, consider with the juice that's left over, what can I do with this? You know, is there another use for it? And certainly eggs may be one of those. My goodness.
Now, actually, I just remembered also for Pesach, I fermented the sweet potato chips.
Oh, she did. Yeah.
Oh, how was that?
They were absolutely delicious.
They were really nice, yeah. They were and good. Sweet potato chips fermented first. That was a winner.
Yeah, and I just fermented them for 24 hours, and then I took them out and let them dry off a bit, and then I oven roasted them in coconut oil.
Mm. Wow, and, I bet that was delicious.
With a little bit of sea salt and rosemary, and my goodness.
That was a winner.
They were wonderful. So I highly recommend that one.
That sounds great.
There's this week's experiments. Dev, what are you going to leave us with as we wrap up?
Well, I'm not sure about this. I honestly don't know. But isn't tofu, isn't that fermented, like
now,
soy?
You know,
soy
come
soybeans.
On, you're poking fun at me.
Fermented soybeans.
All right, so you know that I'm not a big fan of tofu. Look, everybody knows that tofu is made of retired surface wetsuits. I don't understand this fascination with tofu. It's like, you know, primary school erasers. I don't get it. But, you know, people like tofu. But you got to smother it in soy sauce to make it taste like anything. Come on.
Not necessarily.
What is it? What's it made of?
It's soybean.
To tell you, I made it one time. I made an egg salad, and I put some turmeric, you know, the yellow spice turmeric. I put it in there so that it made it yellow, and you know, put some fermented mayonnaise in, and some onions, and however you would make egg salad, and you know, just really chop chopped that hard, you know, tofu up real good and, you know, told everybody this is egg salad. And everybody was like, this is the best egg salad I've ever had. People were just raving about it. And I was laughing and laughing and carrying on. And saying, oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm so glad I've got that recipe. And, you know, everybody finished it. And I was like, okay, there weren't eggs anywhere near that stuff.
It was all tofu.
So you can make it taste like anything you want.
So tofu is good for you, is what you're telling me, right?
As long as it's organic.
I think so. Well, and not too much of it. You don't want to get too much of anything. So
hey, maybe tofu in the chili ferment might be.
There you go. There you go. Yeah.
All right. There it is, tofu. Oh my goodness. All right, my friends, there's some more experiments to try over the week. And Devorah, the Cultured Curra, I thank you for joining us again and letting us know what's happening in your kitchen. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Wonderful to have you. And Khani, thank you for being in the studio.
Oh, you're welcome.
Dear listeners, until next time, be blessed and be set apart by the truth of our Father's Word. Enjoy your kitchen experiments. And please drop us a line and let us know how they went in the comments section. Any questions that you may have as well, we'd appreciate those. And speak to you next week. Shalom.